Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
Welcome back to That's Politics. I'm your host, Mackenzie Atkinson, and today we are going to be deep diving into Antifa. Throughout this episode, we're going to talk about where the idea of Antifa came from, what each party's perspectives is on Antifa, and maybe, just maybe, coming to a conclusion about the true nature of Antifa. Now, I apologize if I sound like crap right now. I'm currently getting over a cold, but I went into this episode with a genuine curiosity. I thought I had a general understanding of what Antifa was, and I was more leaning on the side of it just being an ideology. I have been hearing so much from the right about what Antifa is and what their goals are for years now. I remember back in 2020, during the Black Lives Matter protests, my dad would say that Antifa quote-unquote hijacked the protest and turned it violent. He also blames Antifa for the January 6th insurrection and saying that they turned it violent. Either way, it's now back in the news after President Trump designated Antifa as a terrorist organization and hosted a roundtable talking about Antifa and the threats that they pose. But when I ask people on the left about Antifa, like I did at the No Kings protest, they brushed it off as just an ideology and that the right has lost their minds about it. Again, that's kind of where I found myself. All of this mixed messaging and perspectives on what Antifa is had me confused and curious. A bit of a spoiler here, throughout the process of doing research for this episode, I had my beliefs confronted and I learned a lot, and I hope you learned something too here today. So let's jump right in. Let's start off with defining what Antifa means. So Antifa is short for anti-fascism. Pretty simple. But then what is fascism? Fascism is defined as, quote, a populist political philosophy, movement, or regime that exalts a national and often race above the individual, that is associated with a centralized autocratic government headed by a dictatorial leader, and that is characterized by severe economic and social regimentation and by forcible suppression of opposition. This is a fancy way of saying fascism is a way of describing dictatorships. These regimes heavily attack and silence any opposition to the regime or their agenda. If you want to hear more about fascism and autocratic regimes, I have a whole episode comparing autocracies to democracies where you can hear more about the characteristics of those regimes. But for the sake of time, fascism is not a good thing. It is the opposite of democracy. Antifa is an opposition to fascism. When doing research on this, some articles described it as only an opposition to fascism and white supremacy and not pushing left-wing ideology. Antifa is seen as an alt-left ideology that dabbles in communism, socialism, and anarchism, but there isn't one cohesive platform for anti-fascism. Some might believe in using violence to stop fascism before it starts, and others may not. Like everything in politics, it is a spectrum. Those who subscribe to anti-fascist ideals can all agree that fascism is not good and should be stopped. I personally would describe Antifa as like the Nick Fuentes of the left. For those of you that don't know, Nick Fuentes is a 27-year-old white nationalist political commentator. If you were on TikTok around 2022 when the Supreme Court overturned Roe v. Wade, there was a clip of him going around saying, quote, "Your body, my choice," unquote. Fuentes thinks that the Republican Party is not doing enough to oppress people of color, women, and people on the left. Antifa thinks that Democrats are not doing enough to stop white supremacy and fascism in the U.S. and choose to take things into their own hands. They have lost faith in the institutions of liberal democracy and believe it is up to them to stop fascism by any means necessary, which is where the whole anarchy part of their belief system comes into play. But the thing is that Antifa is not an established organization. They are very decentralized, and when there is an quote-unquote organized effort, it is done through like a network of smaller anti-fascist organizations. Mark Bray, author of Antifa, the Anti-Fascist Handbook, said that there are roughly like 5 to 15 members of anti-fascist group members per U.S. city. The way I picture this is that it's like a professional network. You know someone through a conference or through work, and they put you in contact with other people and so on and so forth. Antifa works the same way. a subscriber to Antifa Beliefs, talks with people, and then they talk to more people, and so on and so forth. But they are also really picky about who they let join their ranks out of worry that some people who oppose them, whether that be a white supremacist or law enforcement, they are worried that they will infiltrate their ranks and try to dismantle them from within. This is not what the Trump administration believes, but we will dive into that here in a second. Just hold on. But you're probably asking at this point, where in the world did Antifa come from? Well, Antifa's origin is kind of vague, but anti-fascist movements in general started taking root in the 1930s in response to the National Fascist Party created by Benito Mussolini in Italy and the Nazis in Germany. But the 1930s was not the first time that fascism itself was expressed. Remember, fascism is based on extreme nationalism and supremacy of race. Colonization would fall under that umbrella of fascism because it includes the Atlantic slave trade and the conquest and exploitation of colonies for national gain, which is based on the belief that those living in the colonies are lesser than the citizens of the colonizing nation and that they need the control of the colonizer. So technically, fascism is nothing new. But the term fascist didn't come around until Mussolini founded his political party. After World War II, anti-fascist movements kind of subsided. There really wasn't anything crazy going on for them to fight against. But anti-fascist movements reemerged in the 1980s and 90s in response to the Berlin Wall falling. The Berlin Wall was officially called the Anti-Fascist Protection Rampart by the communist government of East Germany. When the wall fell, there was a surge in neo-Nazism in Germany because right-wing extremists who lived in West Germany were reunited with their Eastern Germany counterparts. This unification laid the foundation for the creation of the far-right party called the Alternative for Germany, or AfD, which is the main opposition in present-day German politics. Anti-fascist movements picked up again in response to this unification. In the United States, the Anti-Racism Action, or ARA, served as the precursor for Antifa. The ARA combated the KKK, neo-Nazis, and other white supremacist groups from the late 80s into the 2000s. Then, come 2016, Antifa movements picked back up drastically in response to Trump's presidential run and his election. The Antifa groups view Trump and his MAGA supporters as fascist and started the most recent wave of combating fascism, which leads us into some of the tactics that Antifa groups use to combat fascism. There are nonviolent and violent approaches used by Antifa. The nonviolent approaches include poster and flyer campaigns, protests, marches, and community organizing, all of which are in response to a fascist group's efforts. Again, they don't push left-wing ideology. They combat right-wing ideology. If a white supremacy group puts up posters promoting their beliefs, Antifa groups will go behind them, take down their posters, and put up their own anti-fascist posters instead. As an example, the Proud Boys. When they show up to something, there's an anti-fascist group literally waiting for them. Now, you might be wondering, how do they know where these fascist groups are going to be and what they're going to do? You know how I mentioned that Antifa groups are very apprehensive about letting people join their ranks because they're worried about being infiltrated? Well, they infiltrate fascist groups themselves to figure out where the group is going to be next and to gather dirt on the members and to be able to dox them. Which, depending on your perspective, doxing can be perceived as a violent or nonviolent action. Antifa really popularized this after the 2016 election. They infiltrate groups, gather information, and then contact employers to try and get the members of the group they infiltrated fired. They also might publish the information about the members of the group on public forums, which may lead to violent actions being brought against the people that they doxed. That's where the violence kind of kicks in there. What sets Antifa movements apart from other left-wing movements is their willingness to use violence. While researching, the event that was brought up the most was the 2017 Charlottesville Unite the Right rally. The story goes, according to an article published by NPR in August of 2022, the night of August 11th, 2017, a group of white supremacists descended upon Charlottesville, Virginia, in protest of the city's decision to take down a statue of Robert E. Lee. The group walked to the University of Virginia campus with torches and chanting. Some of the pictures show a very stereotypical mob that you would see in, like, the movies. Now, on the morning of August 12th, the group of white supremacists reconvened around the Lee statue, and they were met with resistance from anti-fascist groups. It is not clear who started the violence, but there was a mutual of throwing rocks, cans filled with concrete, water bottles filled with urine, along with tear gas and smoke grenades. The crowd was dispersed, but the conflict did not stop. Instead, it spread throughout the city, where a neo-Nazi named James Fields drove his car through a crowd, injuring dozens and killing 32-year-old Heather Heyer. This event is just a snapshot in the conflict between anti-fascist groups and white supremacists. People who subscribe to Antifa beliefs believe that militant actions are an appropriate measure to be taken based on the previous expressions of fascism seen through the enslavement of Black people and the Holocaust. Due to this willingness to use violence, they have ended up on the Trump administration's radar, and 2 weeks after the Charlottesville rally, Trump mentioned Antifa for the very first time.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
Flash forward 8 years, on September 22nd of 2025, the second Trump administration has now designated Antifa as a domestic terrorist organization. Section 1 of the executive order is as follows. Quote, Antifa is a militarist, anarchist enterprise that explicitly calls for the overthrow of the United States government, law enforcement authorities, and our system of law. It uses illegal means to organize and execute a campaign of violence and terrorism nationwide to accomplish these goals. The campaign involves coordinated efforts to obstruct law enforcement of federal laws through the armed standoffs with law enforcement, organized riots, violent assaults on immigration and customs enforcement and other law enforcement officers, and routine doxing of and other threats against political figures and activists. Antifa recruits, trains, and radicalizes young Americans to engage in this violence and suppression of political activity, then employs elaborate means and mechanisms to shield the identities of its operatives, conceal its funding sources and operations in an effort to frustrate law enforcement and recruit additional members. Individuals with and acting on behalf of Antifa further coordinate with other organizations and entities for the purpose of spreading, fomenting, and advancing political violence and suppression of lawful political speech. This organized effort, designed to achieve policy objectives by coercion and intimidation, is domestic terrorism. Unquote. While the Department of State specifically pointed out four Antifa groups that are now officially labeled as terrorist organizations. Antifa Ost, also known as Antifa East and Hammer Band, I think I'm saying that right, which is based out of Germany and was designated a terrorist organization by Hungary on September 26th of 2025. They are accused of conducting attacks in Budapest in February of 2023. The second group being Informal Anarchist Federation and International Revolutionary Front, FAI or FRI, which is an Antifa group based out of Italy that has self-proclaimed affiliates across Europe, Asia, and South America. According to the department's website, it says, quote, since 2003, FAI/FRI has claimed responsibility for threats of violence, bombs, and letter bombs against political and economic institutions, including a courthouse and other quote-unquote capitalist institutions, unquote. The third group, being Armed Proletarian Justice, based out of Greece, is described as, quote, anarchist and anti-capitalist, unquote, and the group claimed responsibility for a planting of a bomb against riot police in December of 2024, stating, quote, we dedicate our action to those who were killed, tortured, beaten, and raped by Greek police. Armed struggle requires responsibility and political conscience, unquote. The last group is the Revolutionary Class Self-Defense. And it is based out of Greece, and it is an anarchist, anti-capitalist group that claims to fight political and social issues and explicitly cites capitalist structures and state repression as their base. They also have voiced support for Palestine. But this isn't the first time that there has been a push by the Trump administration to designate Antifa and other anti-fascist groups as terrorist organizations. Back in 2019, there were two resolutions proposed, one in the House and one in the Senate, that would designate Antifa as a terrorist organization. Senators Ted Cruz and Kelly Loeffler co-sponsored Senate Resolution 279. There is no sponsor list for the House Resolution 525 under the same goal. The reasonings outlined in the resolutions include: they believe that free speech is equivalent to violence. They have used threats of violence in the pursuit of suppressing political opposition. They have physically assaulted journalists and other individuals during a Turning Point tour at UC Berkeley. They doxed ICE agents. They explicitly reject the authority of law enforcement in the United States and federal, state, and local governments to protect free speech and stop acts of violence. They reject the civil treatment of individuals the group labels as fascists, stating, quote, "We can't just argue against them. We have to prevent them from organizing by any means necessary," unquote. But nothing came of these resolutions as they died in committee in 2020. Now, dying in committee means that the bill or resolution was sent to committee to be workshopped, but it never was approved by the committee to be sent to the floor, or there was never a discharge petition signed to force a vote on it by the entire chamber. Anyway, out of that rabbit hole, all of this effort to designate Antifa as a domestic terrorist organization, but there is not an official designated list to tracking domestic terrorism. There is a list for foreign terrorists, but not domestic. And this might be because of the First Amendment, and it's hard to crack down on something like that, but I'm not sure. The waters are a little murky here. Now, I'm curious as to what liberals and the Democrats have to say about Antifa. The mainstream Democratic leaders have condemned Antifa and their tactics many times during the height of this debate in 2020. Both Nancy Pelosi and Joe Biden have said that our democracy does not have room for political violence. Now, this was back in 2020. On October 16th of this year, Congressman Mark Pocan posted a copy of a letter he and 29 of his colleagues sent to Trump on his X account, quote, "demanding answers to his executive order targeting free speech," unquote. This letter is referencing the Antifa executive order and the presidential memo from September 25th titled "Countering Domestic Terrorism and Organized Political Violence." He acknowledges that public safety and countering genuine threats are a responsibility of the government, but there are some questions about the broad language that was used in the executive order and in the memo. In the letter, he asks for clarification about the organized political violence, which the executive order and the memo define, quote, "anti-Christianity, anti-capitalism, and hostility towards those who hold traditional American values on family, religion, and morality." He points out that this vague approach threatens our constituents' civil liberties and says that officials should not label individuals as, quote unquote, "supporting Antifa" or "coordinating with Antifa" based solely on their protected speech. This letter points out that there isn't a clear definition for what Antifa is and that it lumps peaceful protests in with doxing and violent riots. Pocan and his colleagues list a few questions that clearly state their concerns. Question number one, what is the legal justification, including relevant statutory, constitutional, or presidential support, for classifying anti-Christianity as a threat, particularly in light of First Amendment protections and religious neutrality? Question number two, how does your administration measure and define the examples listed in both documents, including Antifa, anti-Christianity, and anti-capitalism? Furthermore, who has the authority to make these determinations? Question number three, what threshold or evidentiary standards trigger enforcement for investigation? And the final question, what procedural safeguards will prevent overreach or discrimination? New York Representative Dan Gorman posted on his X on September 22nd, saying that, quote, "Trump is trying to suppress opposition by labeling anyone who dissents as, quote unquote, domestic terrorists," unquote. As you know, I've asked some people at the No Kings protest what their thoughts were on the whole Antifa being a terrorist thing. And all of the people we talked to said it was just an ideology and that there is no real threat. And this whole designating them as a terrorist is just fear mongering. Now, what about conservatives? From what I've gathered, conservatives and Republicans believe that there is a large-scale, highly organized group called Antifa that has been building for decades. Allegedly, there is a money trail that is linking this organization together, and Scott Bassett is tracking it down and dismantling it, according to the Antifa Roundtable the White House hosted on October 8th. The Trump administration says that there is an organized effort to attack right-wing journalists. I'm not discrediting what these reporters are saying, and they endured. What journalists have to endure on both sides is horrendous. And I want to put in perspective that Antifa or anti-fascists are under the belief that these right-wing reporters are pushing and platforming fascist beliefs and thus need to be stopped. The White House hosted this roundtable discussion to talk about Antifa specifically, although many tangents were had. Now, during the roundtable, there was a lot of back and forth over whether or not there is a large-scale organization or if it's just a network of organizations. The right-wing journalists or influencers who were in attendance talked about Antifa as a decentralized network of anti-fascist groups that work together to attack conservatives, while some people representing Turning Point USA and the Trump administration portrayed it as a large-scale, highly organized, and highly funded network. Either way, the goal was the same from everyone at the table. Antifa needed to be taken down, and it needs to be dismantled. U.S. Attorney General Pam Bondi says that the administration is going to have the same approach they have with cartels, and they will, quote, destroy the entire organization from top to bottom, unquote. Kristi Noem, the Secretary of Homeland Security, says, quote, they want to kill Americans and destroy our way of life, unquote. The way of life part kind of stuck out to me, and I was a little curious about it, because what way of life are we talking about? We are talking about the First Amendment and free speech? Cool. Are we talking about fascism? Not so cool. I can see the argument for the First Amendment, but does fascism and hate speech fall under the First Amendment protections? I know unpopular speech is protected, but where is the line drawn? And I want you to keep this in mind as we continue this conversation. Now back to what was said at the roundtable. Nick Sorter, a right-wing social media journalist, believes that the police departments in blue cities, along with local governments in the area, are working with Antifa, and that those who burn American flags are anti-fascist terrorists. Brandy Cruz, another right-wing journalist, and Savannah Hernandez, who works for TPUSA, points fingers at the legacy media for not covering it and saying that they, the media, are working with Antifa to push their agenda and push the portrayal of the current administration and the MAGA supporters as fascists, giving them more fuel to go after them. Now moving on from what was discussed at the roundtable, Politico published a story about Speaker Mike Johnson's thoughts on the No Kings protest. Johnson said that the entire protest was a, quote, hate America rally, unquote, that would draw the pro-Hamas wing and the Antifa people. This perspective continues to conflate Antifa with terrorism. But I think there is more than a genuine effort to protect people here. Which leads me into my thoughts on the whole Antifa thing. What do I think of anti-fascism as an ideology? Well, I would say that I support it, again, as an ideology. Fascism is bad, and we have seen what fascist regimes have done in the past. It gave way to the Holocaust, to slavery, and to the oppression of entire nations. We fought an entire world war against fascism for a reason. Fascism is dangerous. But what about Antifa as an organization of sorts? I do not think that there is an overarching larger organization or conspiracy going on like the Trump administration has been saying. I believe the right-wing journalists on this side saying that it's a disorganized group of anti-fascist groups. I think the Trump administration is aiming to fearmonger on this point. I do believe that there are smaller groups that have the same goal that might work together in their local areas, but I do not think that there is a singular quote-unquote Antifa with like a leader and other things. I do not agree with their tactics because I do not think people should die for their beliefs. But I do not think people should be absolved of all consequences for their beliefs and their freedom of speech. There are social consequences for what you say. The government should not be able to go after you, but that does not mean that people have to like you for what you say, based on the idea of the First Amendment. Now, what about the media's role? Are they supporting Antifa by not covering them? I do not think so, and I do not believe it because of some leisure reading I've been doing recently. I currently am entrenched in the book called How Fascism Works by Jason Stanley. in the chapter titled Unreality, which talks about conspiracy theories and how they're used by fascist regimes, there's this section that I want to read to you. It says, quote, conspiracy theories are tools to attack those who ignore their existence. By not covering them, the media is made to appear biased and ultimately part of the very conspiracy they've refused to cover, unquote. And I think this applies to this conversation very clearly. The Trump administration continues to sow distrust in the media, and this is just another way to push that narrative by saying the media is working with Antifa. Antifa being terrorists, though? Well, I think the motives for designating them as terrorists isn't about protecting citizens, but more about being able to crack down on opposition without limitations. Once a group or entity is labeled a terrorist organization, once it is designated as a threat to national security, the gloves are off. The U.S. government is able to play the shoot first, ask questions later game, which is very dangerous when you talk about opposing ideologies and cracking down on political opposition. Trump has already said that people on the left are quote unquote enemies from within. And I, at this point, would not put it past him to use designating left ideologies as terrorism to push this divide and hatred of the left. I do think that there has been an increase in fascism in the United States, and I think that we have a duty as members of a democracy to point it out and to do our best to counteract it at every turn. And this may be at the polls. And the first step to that is educating ourselves so that we can identify it. We also have to understand and think critically about where we stand on issues. So I'll leave you with some food for thought. Do you think that fascist beliefs fall under First Amendment protections, or should they be considered hate speech and thus not protected? Going off of that, where do you stand on hate speech? Do you even believe that there is such thing as hate speech? And where would you draw the line? Question number two, do you think fascism should be fought? And question number three, how would you, as a member of a democracy, fight fascism? Would you go to the polls? Would you protest? What would you do? And that is all I have for you today. Thank you for tuning in today, where we talked about what Antifa is and isn't, and we also talked about what each side of the aisle's perspective is on this. To view source material used in this episode, you can always check it out on the podcast website at thatspoliticspodcast.com. To recommend an episode or give feedback on today's episode, you can always email me at mackenzieatkinson@thatspoliticspodcast.com. Or you can DM me on the official podcast Facebook page. I'm your host, Mackenzie Atkinson, and I'll see you next time.